My God-loving beloved children, one day recently I saw something, and I would like to tell you about it. I believe it is quite symbolic. This is what I saw. Just as a mother cradles a newborn child in her arms, wrapped in swaddling clothes, and she holds it in her arms. In the same way, I saw myself holding a little baby. It was wrapped in swaddling clothes, and I held it tightly in my right arm, close to my breast. I felt great love for this little child and was deeply united with it in my soul. At times I felt it was a little girl, and at other times a little bird. This was the sense I had, and my purpose was to travel along a certain road. The road was difficult, with steep climbs, descents, and hardships. But I had to travel it, holding this little child in my arms and striving to save it and bring it safely to its destination. As I walked along this road, I encountered wicked men. All these men had their eyes fixed with great malice on what I was holding in my arms. They were trying to devise some way to take it from me, kill it, or poison it. Seeing all their malice, I tried to hold it tightly so that it would not slip away, and so that they could not take it from me or kill it. Then, as I continued along the road, I also sensed behind me, forming something like a semicircle, a protective presence. I sensed that armed men were guarding and protecting me. For this reason, despite their evil intentions and all their efforts, those robbers could not come near enough to seize what I was holding. At one point, as I was walking, I saw a dragon like the one depicted in the icon of St. George. It had wings, a head like a crocodile, and all the other features. It was ready to rush at me and snatch away what I was holding. Then I saw a hand appear on my right, holding a large bayonet, and it thrust the spear into the beast's belly. Once it had been pierced, poison gushed from the beast's mouth like water from a fountain. It was spewing the poison out. When the hand withdrew the spear, the beast rose, took two or three steps, then fell down and died. After that, I continued on, holding very tightly what seemed at times to be a little girl, and at other times a little bird, wrapped there in swaddling clothes. When I had passed through all the difficulties, I felt relieved and at ease, sensing that the dangers were probably over. Even then, to make certain, I held it close and felt that it was still in my arms. I even reached down and felt its little feet, and I saw that I truly was still holding it and had made it through. When I came to myself, I was given the understanding that this little child represented my soul, or the soul of every person, every spiritual child for whom I have taken responsibility. Indeed, the road to Christ, the road by which a person reaches that highest destination, must be traveled through the difficulties of this life. The road is difficult by its very nature, and there are also unseen robbers lying in wait. They have set traps, ambushes, and many other obstacles to block every traveler, every Christian walking along the road that leads to Christ. These are part of it as well. These demons are like the aerial toll houses through which every soul must pass in order to reach Christ. In the same way, here below we pass through these toll houses, these temptations and these demons. If a person, a Christian, passes through these demons here below, he should believe that he will also pass through those that await him there. By this I mean that he must not become ensnared by any passion here below. He must not yield to a sin that weighs down his radiant soul to such a degree that he knowingly submits and surrenders himself to it. The traps are many and varied. We encounter, for example, the demon of sexual immorality. This demon receives particular help from our fallen human nature, because desire is naturally sown in the flesh. The demon exploits this desire and stirs up a fierce warfare against us. When a person encounters this demon, it holds images, forms, and idols in one hand, while in the other it holds a burning torch. When it encounters the soul, it displays sinful, alluring, and scandalous images, forms, and idols. It sets them before the eyes and tries to make the soul dizzy and draw its gaze toward them so that desire may arise. With its other hand, it sets the natural desire ablaze and intensifies its burning. Thus, with alluring images on one side and the fire of desire on the other, it tries to set the temple of God on fire. And this person, the Christian who has been baptized, is the temple of God. He was baptized in the name of the Holy Trinity and destined to inherit the kingdom of God. But when he yields to this devil, he becomes accountable. Then the passion takes control, becomes a tyrant, and the soul is taken captive. After that, the soul submits to this tyrant without any resistance. As the soul continues on its way, it encounters another toll house, another demon, another trap. For example, it encounters the demon of judging others, a fearsome demon, and one that is always close at hand. It is found everywhere, in every conversation, every discussion, and every encounter between people. This demon is always present and takes the leading role. Because we are all subject to the passions and are sinful, there is plenty of material for condemnation. This demon draws us away, and we begin to condemn one another. Yet there is an explicit prohibition from Christ himself. Judge not, lest you be judged, the Apostle Paul says. Judge nothing before the Lord comes, because he knows the hidden deeds of men. We do not know them. Therefore do not judge one another before the appointed time. There was once a brother in a cenobitic monastery. This monk was negligent and sluggish. He rarely came down to the church, attended to his duties, or kept his canon, his rule of prayer, and so forth. When the time came for this monk to depart from the world, the brothers gathered around him, hoping to be edified and to see what would happen. In those final moments, they saw him face death peacefully and with a certain joy. The brothers were astonished and asked him, "Brother, we know that you were not a diligent monk, but that you passed your life in negligence. Why then, do we now see you setting out on the great journey to meet God with such peace and joy?" "It is true, my fathers, that I was indeed negligent and did not fulfill my duties, but I put my faith in what the Lord told us, 'Judge not, lest you be judged,' throughout my life. I tried not to judge anyone. Whatever another person did to me, I did not hold it within myself, but forgave him immediately. The sun never set while I still had a misunderstanding, coldness, or any passion against a brother. Whatever passion arose, I corrected it at once. And so I believe that the Lord will not judge me, since I too judge no brother." The brothers marveled at the brother's wise approach, how he had found salvation so easily. In our own day, this demon holds first place. Whether I am sinful or not, I find it very easy to judge others. And when this demon, if this demon prevails and conquers a person as a passion, that same demon will become a toll house when the soul ascends. It will certainly prevent the soul from ascending, because it will bring forward the word of the Lord. The toll house will say to the soul, "Throughout your life you continually judged others. Therefore you are not permitted to proceed upward, for there is an explicit commandment from the Lord." As we continue through this life, we encounter another demon, for example, the demon of anger and wrath. This demon inflames us inwardly, making us angry and wrathful, restless and abusive, and causing us to raise our voices. All these are sins of the irascible part of the soul. Anger is in us by nature, but it was given to us so that we might direct it against sin and against our enemy. Unfortunately, the devil, like a skilled craftsman, redirects this natural anger against our neighbor and our brother. Anger takes possession of us and turns us into beasts. Whenever a person is in his cell, the demon brings before him images of those who hurt him, embittered him, or hindered him in some way, stirring up fury within him. He becomes inflamed and angry, and in this way his soul consents to the passion. Then the demon gains an ever greater, stronger, and more serious hold over him, a more important place, and so on. Every passion, every demon, once it has gained a claim over a person, will hinder that person's ascent to meet God. That is why we must be watchful here below, along this path of life, where by the grace of God, we have the power to conquer the demons, whereas during the soul's ascent, the soul has no such power when it remains indebted to them. When he is accountable for it, to free himself. Now, even if we have given in to some passion, we can still struggle against it. By the grace of God, we can cut off that passion, cast it away, and be freed from it. Christ has given us so many radiant weapons. Above all, we have prayer, an all-powerful weapon. When a monk keeps unceasing watchfulness and prayer, by the grace of God, he easily overcomes difficulties. Watchfulness tells him, "Be careful here, be careful there." Here is a demon, here is a snare, here is a pit. And when he comes face to face with the demon, he strikes him with the weapon of prayer. In this way, the path opens before him. But when there is no watchfulness, we fall upon the enemy like blind men, straight into the trap, straight into the pit. When a person has no watchfulness, he probably has no prayer either. I believe these two are joined together and each one helps the other.
We should often take stock of ourselves and gather our thoughts in self-examination.
We should recollect ourselves and examine ourselves. Am I walking on the right path? Have I perhaps become entangled in some passion? I look within myself. Is my heart free from the passions, or is it caught somewhere? And if this self-examination helps me see that I have stumbled somewhere, then I should strive to set things right. I must try to correct myself. I must make an effort. Effort is a step toward correction and toward freedom. For a person to see that he is ruled by the passions, that he has been caught somewhere, is itself an illumination from God. It is something that will help him correct himself, because if he does not see, he will not be watchful, and if he is not watchful, he will not escape. Therefore, to see when one has eyes to see is the first thing needed in order to walk rightly. My elder made this spiritual accounting every night during his prayer. After finishing his prayer, he would look within himself and examine his soul. Has it been caught anywhere? Has it yielded anywhere? Has it gone wrong anywhere? Then he would renew his resolve. I will correct this. I will make a new beginning. Through this continual effort, by the grace of God, he succeeded in becoming completely free from the passions and in feeling truly free. And in his last days he said to me, "My child, I feel an entire paradise within me. Within myself I experience the blessedness of God. You too, while you are young, must compel yourself to become free from your passions, so that when you reach my age you may experience this state, which is a foretaste of paradise." A living hope of salvation is the pledge, the evidence that the soul will present. As we ascend, this watchfulness along the path of this life and of our salvation will help us at the hour of death, the most difficult hour for every person, to find ourselves in a favorable state. We will find ourselves with a quiet conscience, which will be a consoling angel amid the tribulation and anguish of death. Alas, what a struggle the soul endures when it is separated from the body! How it weeps then! It turns its eyes toward the angels and entreats them in vain. It stretches out its hands toward other people, but finds no one able to help. At that hour, nothing can help a person except what he himself has done, his good works and his clean conscience. Even the angels cannot simply help. They too look for something of value, for good works they can present. Then they will help the departing soul. When Theodora's soul was ascending, when the angels were carrying it upward, they encountered great difficulty. If the intercessions of St. Basil, her elder, had not helped her, she would not have passed through the aerial toll houses. The angels themselves said, "If we had not received Basil's help, we would scarcely have freed this soul from the demons. And when I think of death, great fear arises within me." Abba Agathon was once asked, "Elder, do you not trust in your works? Are you not confident that you will be saved?" A brother pressed him, "But why, Abba? I see that you are rich in ascetic works. If you are not saved, who will be?" Abba Agathon answered, "As far as it was humanly possible, I tried to please God, but I do not know whether my works were pleasing to God. When I go there and hear from his own mouth that my works were good and conducive to salvation, then I will believe it." Saint Anthony wept when he realized that the hour of his departure was drawing near. Saint Irene Chrysovalantu did likewise. I would say that very few saints pass through death joyfully or without pain, because death is difficult by its very nature. And if the saints faced and encountered death in this way, what about us sinners? What about me first of all? With my many responsibilities and the many burdens I carry, what will happen at that hour? I mourn and lament when I contemplate death. My fathers, I place my hope first in the grace of God, and second in a quiet conscience, trusting that these will help us overcome the difficulty of death. If we are watchful on the road we travel toward death, if we are attentive to our life and obey whatever our conscience directs us to do, then, according to the spiritual law, we should receive considerable help in that difficult hour. Let us not forget our purpose. We are sinners. We are weak and frail human beings. We are lazy. For this reason, we are shown a certain special compassion. At the very least, if we cannot undertake much bodily ascesis because of our infirmity, let us practice ascesis in our nous and in our tongue. Let the nous entertain no evil thoughts, and let the tongue speak no sinful words. And we hope to find salvation. The Holy Fathers have great ascetic achievements to present in every respect. Let us at least strive to present our nous, our spiritual intellect, as pure. And how shall we present the nous as pure? By driving away the evil images brought to us by the passions and the demons, let us also cleanse our tongue and not speak indecent things. Above all, let us say only what is beneficial and edifying. Nothing harmful to ourselves or our neighbor should come from our lips. Let no corrupt word proceed out of our mouth. Let us not utter any foul-smelling word. Let us also guard our heart, so that it takes no sensual pleasure in the passions. Let us not allow our consent to a logismos, an intrusive thought, to reach the heart. If by the grace of God we strive to guard these three things, and keep them pure, we may hope to find mercy on the day of judgment. So let our struggle be to guard the nous, the heart, and the mouth. When these are pure, our bodily deeds will also be pure. When the heart is not defiled, neither is the body. Both good and evil come forth from the heart, as do purity and impurity. We should continually think about the hour of death. When we lie down to sleep, let us sleep with death in mind and meditate upon it, for sleep itself is an image of death. Just as we shall one day be laid dead upon a wooden bier, so we now lie down upon our bed, and when we awaken and rise to work, let us again work with the remembrance of death beside us. Let us meditate on death at every moment. When we live and walk in this way, our life will certainly be watchful. Remember your last end, and you will never sin. It is extremely beneficial to be near someone who is dying. A person then sees that he too will come to this same condition. There is no escaping that hour or that state. Death is often very painful and difficult. Near the end of his life, St. Anthony said to his spiritual children, his children, that keeping death in mind had helped him never to neglect his duties. Thus, when we lose the remembrance of death, we fall into negligence and spiritual sloth on the path of our salvation. So, with attentiveness, prayer, and the remembrance of death, let us press on toward our destination, and with God's help, through the unseen power of our guardian angel and the saints who protect us, let us hope that we shall reach the end of the road without being seized by any demon. For if we are seized by even one demon, at even one aerial toll house, we shall not be able to pass beyond it. A person is not seized merely because he is being attacked, but when he gives way and becomes a slave to the passion and to the evil one. The difficulty suddenly arises, but when a person is attacked and overcomes the devil, he is continually crowned and rewarded. In our prayers, we constantly ask God and our Panagia to help us overcome all the difficulties the devil places in our way and reach our great destination, victorious,